Broadcasting from the heart of Stumptown. This is the Coin Rejects, episode 67. And we're back. I am sitting on the internet with my fellow rejects.
I'm Brandon.
Jesus.
I was sitting on the internet too, apparently. I'm Brandon.
I'm Ian.
And I'm Jordan. Broadcasting from the home of the Western Conference champion Portland Timbers soccer team. Yeah, getting ready to go to MLS Cup in 2 days here to take the cup once again.
And you will be there.
Of course, yeah.
Of course.
It's here on home soil, right where we broadcast from.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
So if you would like to visit us on the web, you can go to coinrejects.com if you want to visit our Twitter account. We are Coin Rejects on Twitter. We are Coin Rejects on Instagram. You can email us at coinrejects@gmail.com, and you can send us a voicemail at
503-766-2263.
And we have a few voicemails, so let's check them out.
Hi, Coin Rejects. This is Josh in Columbus, and I was calling because now that things are starting to get back in more normal mode, I'd like to go and check out some of these bigger arcade expos that I've never gotten since I'm newer to the hobby. Kind of want to see which ones you guys recommend. I know you're on the West Coast, so a little different from me out here in the Midwest, but I would like to, you know, go do some tourism to play more arcades. All right. Thanks for the podcast, guys.
Cool.
Very cool, Josh.
Thanks, Josh. We'll be hearing from Josh again shortly.
Like, real shortly? Or should we answer his question?
We should answer his question first.
Okay.
Well, he said he's in the Midwest, so my first thought, like, I wrote down a few of these after listening to this voicemail, so my first thought was the Midwest Gaming Classic, which I've heard a lot about but have never been to, and I think they have a good, healthy arcade area in that expo.
I think Galp and Ghost, right? That's the biggest arcade right now.
But I thought he was talking more about, like, events.
Oh, expos.
Okay.
Yeah, there's also, I guess in the vicinity, Southern Fried Gaming Expo. I don't know if that's still going on.
Yep, that's in Atlanta. I looked these up.
Yeah, there's also the Pinball Expo. That's in Chicago, which a lot of people go to that. Then they go to Galloping Ghost, kind of a combo trip. Only other one I know of is that's farther away, but still on that side of the states isn't Free Play Florida. It's like, I think that's like the only other one that I've heard of over there. So that's all I know.
Yeah, that one's in Orlando. The other one that I've heard, and I've heard about this one from listening to the Broken Token podcast, is the Louisville Arcade Expo in Louisville, in Kentucky. So that's kind of been that area. But more in our area, we have California Extreme, which Jordan and I have gone to quite a bit. The ones we can speak from experience, California Extreme is an excellent expo, as well as our local PRGE, which has a pretty good arcade area every year. Hopefully it'll be back next year. And the Northwest Pinball and Arcade Show up in Tacoma, Washington.
Yeah, the WPAS is a real good show. And PRGE is pretty okay too, but definitely console heavy. So if you're into both coin-op and console, that's the show for you. But NWPAS is pure coin-op, just how we like it.
But if he hasn't been to Galloping Ghost, from what I can tell, that's the arcade in that part of the world. Next time I find myself in Chicagoland, I'll definitely check it out. It's been a few years since I've been there, and I guess I didn't know about it then, or has it not been around for a long, long time?
It's been almost, oh gosh, I think almost, I don't want to say 10 years, but it's close.
Okay.
It's been around for a while.
So I'm thinking I was in Chicago maybe 7, 6 years ago. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe it was just in its infancy and maybe not as big then. But
yeah, and I think I was just doing other things and not thinking about arcade stuff. But yeah, that arcade I think is the biggest arcade right now.
Yep.
What, they put a new game on this floor every week?
Yeah, I think it's every Monday.
That's amazing. Yeah, and you know, classic. Yeah, and some of them are like wacky ROM revisions and stuff. But still, I mean, damn, that's really cool. We didn't have that shit in the 80s.
Yeah, I'd like to check that place out too.
Unless you want to play 800 copies of Miss Pac in a row, maybe.
We had that.
Yeah,
in Columbus, Ohio, that was the last time Timbers won the Cup. Was in 2015 over there. So what a coincidence.
There you go.
There you go.
So there's a few options for you. And did you have some more, Brandon?
No, there's got to be some other ones that have crept up over the years that maybe haven't got as established, but I'm sure there is. But those are the heavy hitters.
Yeah, what was the show where the Nibbler movie was all kind of based around? Was that Southern Fried Gaming Expo?
I don't know.
I don't think so. That might have been. Oh, there's also that's more. Fuck, what is it called?
And also, I guess the show at Fun Spot every year. I mean, that's not really his neighborhood, but he's closer than we are.
Is there a show there every year?
Yeah, there's a Dave from Buffalo is always telling us about that we need to go out there for a thing that happens every year. But maybe it's just him and his buddies. I don't know.
Yeah, that'd be fun too.
Mm-hmm.
The one I just thought of off the tip of my tongue was Allentown, which is basically a pinball swap meet. You could buy a shit ton of pins there. People, it's all pinball. I mean, I bet you probably wouldn't find much video or vids, but huge swap there with parts, and people just bring trailers full of games or pinballs to sell. So good place to pick up a collection.
I heard you bring the keys to your pinball machine and you all throw them in a big bowl, and then whoever takes whatever key, then they go home with that pinball machine.
Sweet.
Just for that night.
Yeah. And they have to bring it back the next day.
Yeah. I didn't think it was that kind of a swap meet.
Whoa.
Swapping.
So yeah, I'll put the links to all these in our show notes. Anybody that wants to check them out on the web, get some more information. So let's move on to our next voicemail, also from Josh.
Coin Rejects. I thought of a good thing I wanted you guys to share. What's your favorite tool that you use for arcade resto that's not necessarily for arcade restoration? I just thought of this because I recently bought a thermal camera for my that hooks to my phone. But anyways, it's actually helped me find problem spots on PCBs and monitor chassis, because things like transistors, which may check out okay or hard to check out in circuit, sometimes they'll either be too hot or not be hot at all, show activity, and I can see that on a thermal camera. It actually really, really helps. All right, I'm looking forward to your answers.
You learned that from us. You wouldn't know that, would you?
Do we have a thermal camera? I don't have a thermal camera. I know you have to do it the other way. You freeze.
No, we've mentioned it.
It starts working.
I hear they're good.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. I kind of want one now. And I'm sure they're not $1,000 bazillion like they used to be.
There are a few hundred still.
Yeah.
Isn't FLIR in Oregon?
FLIR, yeah, that's it. And I think they're an Oregon company. Yeah, yeah. FLIR, right?
Yep. Not the baseball trading or the sports card. Not to be confused with the fucking canopies for trucks.
FLIR.
FLIR, and FLIR.
I will drop one of my favorite arcade repair. It's not really a tool, but I'll drop it anyways.
That's the point, right?
Q-tips for applying things like thermal paste if you're doing the bottle cap transistors on a vector monitor. Or, you know, you end up having to do that on a fair number of things as well. A lot of people will use Q-tips to apply that shit, but it leaves bits of cotton all over the place and is a mess and sucks. I've also seen some people recommend that for, like, cleaning up flux on PCBs. Hate it. But you take your ass to Target and you go to the makeup section and they have eyeshadow applicators, Up and Up brand eyeshadow applicators, and they're like a little hunk of plastic with some foam on it, and they are ideal for this stuff. You'll get that thermal grease applied nicely, won't leave any crap in there. It costs 99 cents for a pack of 20.
I believe that's called a suppository.
No, that's different.
I know, I'm joking.
Restoration.
I'm choking.
I've found those at the dollar store as well.
That's really cool. I never would have thought of that.
I've always just done the, from my CPU building days, just done this, the whole, like, what is it, like grain of rice or something like that. And then you just fucking sandwich the heatsink on with its own weight and then just call it good, usually.
With a grain
of rice? Use like a grain of rice size of thermal compound.
Oh, okay.
It's the correct portion, basically, just like brushing your teeth. Or, you could just use like a plastic piece of plastic and just fucking rub it or something too.
Yeah, I couldn't think of any tools necessarily. I mean, there's lots of tools that I've used for restoration that weren't originally purchased for that, like any kind of woodworking tools or anything like that. But I was thinking the one thing that was kind of out there that I use repeatedly is I have these 1-quart paint cans in my garage, and if I ever need to prop up a game enough to like take the leg levelers or to move them around or to get access to the bottom of the cabinet just a little bit, I'll like prop the game up with the little paint can underneath it and do the stuff I need to do under the game. That's like something I've done repeatedly and it always works. So didn't buy paint cans to do that, but they work.
That's good. I had a game propped up on some kind of like Tupperware tub and it just kind of smashed it. So paint can sounds like a better idea to me.
Yeah, those like little quart size paint cans are perfect for that.
Someone once told me to buy like a suction cup thing for like taking back glasses off pinball. And I did, but I've honestly never used it. It just hangs on the wall. But
wow. Somebody,
they swore by it. They said it was great for bezels and stuff, but I never remember to try it.
Don't they have a little lip that you're supposed to just pull up on the bottom? I mean, do you need that?
Yeah, the back glasses do. But maybe he was talking about like flat bezels like Space Invaders, that kind of thing.
Space Invaders has one too. Has the same little lip.
Oh, okay.
It's right fucking there.
Maybe his games are missing the lip. I don't know. Maybe just take...
I guess Atari games don't, right? They just have the glass just shoved right down underneath the control panel.
Yeah, but they have little finger holes so you can get your hand underneath and pull it out.
Exactly.
It's not hard. So anyhow, I bought one of those once but never used it, so that's not my favorite.
I have one that had, it was missing that bottom trim to lift it up and sucked ass to get that that back glass off, and I never replaced it. So that would have been in that situation, but whatever.
Yeah, I have the tool for you. I couldn't find a roller the other day when I was doing some laminate, so I asked Liz if she had a rolling pin for like
rolling
biscuits or something, and she did, so I used that.
You fucking make a pizza afterwards on top of the cabinet.
That's another one that I've found helpful. I mostly don't care how my games look because I try not to buy stuff that's super beat up. But I have put side art on 2 games, and Cabaret side art on Centipede and Asteroids Deluxe. And I have a squeegee that I bought to wipe the moisture off of the inside of the glass doors in my shower. And that is perfect for getting the side art to go down bubble free. You lift up one side once you have it stuck down in one place and just squeegee it down in order to get all the air bubbles out. So I think that's another good thing to have if you do much art.
So is that a rubber lipped squeegee?
Exactly.
Okay. Like a car window one?
Exactly.
At this gas station.
This one has a wider rubber lip. It's like 3/4 inch instead of... like, you know, 1/8 inch, like you would do for a window washing.
Damn, it's like a fucking it's screen pinning.
Yeah, it's an OXO one. It's plastic, and then rubber is on the edge, so it's not going to scrape stuff up if you end up dropping it or something like that, like one of those old school metal ones with a really short rubber bit on it.
Oh, yeah. I found some that are like a felt around the one side. People use them for putting on like vehicle wraps. And I kind of like those because they don't stick. They don't have any traction. They just glide right over stuff. They're pretty nice. And I don't know where else you get them other than look for vehicle wrap shit.
Yeah. You can just get them at sign shops and stuff. So the thing, this is a fun fucking fact before the fun fucking fact is that... Yeah, don't ever use those with just the plastic. You know how like they usually come without the felt on the end?
Like a Bondo thing? Like
Those Bondo squeegees that you're talking about that usually, you know, are for vinyl shops and all that, applying decals. A lot of them, the really, really cheap ones, just have the plastic edge and not a felt. Like a protector. And it's kind of funny, but if you ever watch, you know, some of the popular YouTube arcade channels where they're putting on side art or control panels, and you'll see them use the squeegees that don't have that felt protection. And if you watch afterwards as they're like panning around, it's just the laminate's scratched. That will scratch the laminate, or you know, you could potentially just, if it's a cheap print or repro work, you could just fucking nick that artwork too. And so, I mean, I don't know why people don't use the felt shit, you know, on the end of their squeegees.
Glides real nice.
Real nice. Especially if you use the wet method.
I don't put side art on any other way. I don't see why you wouldn't use the wet method. Unless you just like to like roll the dice with your own money and there's no way to win more. You just lose.
Yeah. That's the thrill, I guess.
I could lose. Whoa.
I could fuck this whole thing up. This is amazing.
The Brother P Touch. We like the Brother P Touch for making
it. Oh, yeah. I was just thinking of when I think of restoring, I think of like body work and cleaning and stuff like that. Not necessarily the electrical aspects of board work, but I mean, pretty much everything for arcade stuff is not for arcade stuff. If you think about it, I mean, even an oscilloscope, I guess, is meant for troubleshooting some sort of boards, but not specifically arcade games. But I was thinking of stuff like, you know, automotive body, auto body, basically equipment is basically.
Oh yeah, I love to use the hammers. They work really well.
Yeah, not only the hammers, but the the buffing tools, the waxes, the specialized cleaners. Those are all meant for mediums that also exist in arcade games, or you know, a lot of carpentry stuff. Obviously, is specially formulated for, you know, certain types of wood. And so when you're looking to restore a certain aspect of your game, you know, you need to know what the material you're restoring is. And once you know that, if you start searching for stuff that way, you'll find, you know, like, oh, stuff from like a woodworking forum or something that's tried and true. You know, that's how like a lot of people discover like, oh, Bondo for arcade games or just other weird shit like that. But I just kind of thought of it in the generic sense, not necessarily a specific tool that I use. I mean, I guess soldering irons and wire strippers, I guess, are like the most, seems like the most thing that I always use. So that's about it.
That's about it.
Yeah. I think if there's some really weird tool, one day it'll pop into my head like, oh, yeah, this thing.
Yeah.
I can't think of it off the top of my head.
Exactly.
Rolling pin is kind of weird. I'll go with
it. Yeah, sounds good. Pair of scissors. Bottom of your arcade cabinet.
Just glue them right in.
Yeah, glue the pair of scissors to the bottom.
You don't know, but one day you'll need
that. I barbecued a control panel overlay off before, so I guess a barbecue isn't really designed for arcade games.
Yeah, or when people put harnesses in dishwashers and shit like that.
Yeah
dishwasher.
Yeah, dishwasher. Fucking stovetop. Oven. I like to saute my control panels.
You guys ready for the next one?
Sure.
Yeah.
Thanks, Josh.
Number 3.
Hey, Coin Rejects. What's up? Dave from Buffalo here. Hope all you guys are doing well. Got a question for you. I am currently going to sell a game that I had once, and I sold it, and then I got it again. Now I'm going to sell it again. To buy a game that I sold and I'm getting again. So it sounds confusing, but I'm wondering how many times have you guys, anybody done that where it's been multiple times where you've had a game, not just once, but like twice or maybe even three times. And the games in question, I'll tell you, I had a Super Hang-On, which I sold, which my kids liked. And then I decided, you know what, I want that again. So I bought a Super Hang-On again. So I have a Super Hang-On. I sold my Centipede because I didn't like the side art and the cabinet was really rough. And I'm like, you know what, I'll sell it and wait for a better one. So now I'm getting a better Centipede, but I'm limited on space, so I'm selling the Super Hang-On again. Just wondering if anybody can beat me. Has it been more than twice? I wonder if anyone's like three times at a game or maybe even four where you've had it, sold it, got it again, had it, sold it, got it again, that kind of thing. All right, it's a little confusing, complicated, but hope all is well. Take care, guys. See ya. Bye-bye.
All right. So there's a very important part of that question that was not specified, which is, does it have to be the same copy, same cabinet, or are we talking about selling one copy of a game and buying a different copy of the same game? I think that's
important. I think he's just saying title. I don't think he's saying
exact
same game, like serial number game. But that could be another question for sure.
But it requires you to sell it. And buy it again, though, not just have buy.
Not just buy them all, Ian.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've owned multiple copies of several games, but I don't believe I have ever sold all copies of a title and then bought one again.
So there you go. There's that.
But I have owned like four or five Asteroids and probably a half dozen Tempests over the years.
Yeah, I was going to say, like you guys, Ian and Jordan, I think, have had multiple copies of games at one time, a few times.
Yeah, I'm not as bad as Ian, but this is funny because the one game that I'm doing over again right now is Marble Madness. And the reason why I had to get another Marble Madness is because, Dave, you have my old Marble Madness. So I traded it to you to get a Fire Escape, which I didn't think I was going to probably get in any other way. And I just figured I'll be able to put together a Marble Madness down the road. I think I had a line on half of the stuff already or something like that. So I'm finally like finishing up that Marble Madness right now. So there's that game I've had two of. I believe I've done the Exidy 440 shooters twice at least. And I don't have any of those anymore. And I have two of the same game right now, which are not completed. Electrosport. What is that game I have?
Tomahawk
Missile. I have two
Tomahawk
of them.
Missile.
That's kind of a weird thing. I basically had those given to me. And I've had Track and Field twice, and I don't have Track and Field at all anymore. But I had an Upright, and I had the Cocktail version. I traded and sold those off. I know both people. Oh, actually, the Upright got traded for an Indiana Jones that became the Marble Madness. That used to be a Marble Madness to begin with. I deconverted it. And then Scott has the Cocktail version, if I remember right. And then something else. Oh, 4-player Warlords. I searched for fucking 10 years to get one, and then within 6 months, I had two. And so Ian has one of those now. So, and that's about all I can think of for games I've had doubles of. I'll go with that.
That's pretty good. But never three times? Three times over?
Never three times over. Yeah, yeah. I've gotten better at picking games where I don't buy them unless I want to keep them, or I know that somebody else wants them and I'll finish them up and trade them for something. I try not just to get them willy-nilly anymore. But I could think of, some games that I used to have that if I found a good copy of for, decent price, I'd buy again.
I'm actually remembering I do have one game that I have done this with. I think it was the third game I bought was a Klax Upright, which I then sold to Brandon, which is how we met. And then I subsequently bought a Klax Cabaret. So there is.
Yeah. There you go.
Bought the game, sold it, bought another copy.
Nice. This is with the Fire Escapes, and the Marble Madness is like 6 degrees of Dave from Buffalo.
Then Ian bought a Fire Escape, and then.
Yeah, I suppose I had two Fire Escapes for a minute there because one was Ian's.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a good game.
I started keeping track of all the games that I've owned in VAPS. So even if I've sold it, I put it in there. But it's just looking. I've had Asteroids Deluxe twice. Bought, sold, bought. And I want to buy another one. Could have gotten another one a few years ago, and I turned it down because space.
Do you want the Upright or the Cabaret?
What do you think?
Oh, the Cocktail?
And then had Joust twice. Bought Joust from Jordan, sold it, bought another one, or got another one. And then Robotron had bought one, got another one, so I had two at once, sold one, and then still have the second one. So I've done two copies things three times so far.
Yeah, the only one for me is the Joust. I sold my Joust and bought another one that I have now. That's the only bought, sold one that I've got.
Oh, wait. I take that back. I've done it another time. I had a Miss Pac-Man Cocktail. Or I had an Upright. Sold it. Got a Cocktail. Sold it. Probably won't buy it again. Maybe. I don't know if Pole Position 2 counts, but I had the Pole Position 1. Pole Position 2 Upright. Pole Position 1 Cockpit. Yeah. All right. I give up. All right. I'm done.
I just realized I got one more. I had two Tempests, but I guess I had them at the same time, so maybe that doesn't count.
That counts.
I had bought another one because it was a good deal, and then my friend CJ said, "Hey, I think that's the game I used to play as a kid. Let me get that. Let me get that from you." And so then I traded or sold it to him pretty right away, because it did come from like the place. Like, it came from his area, neck of the woods, kind of down by Salem, Enchanted Forest. There was some thing down there that had video games. I forget the name of it, but yeah, it was the one he played growing up. So he's like, "Oh, I need that game." And he has lots of games. He's got the Coin Jam down in Salem is his arcade. This was before he had that. But anyhow, that's one more story where I guess that's not the same, though. I just was like being greedy, basically.
Very nice. Cool. So we've done it quite a bit.
Thanks for the call, Dave.
It's a lot of work, though, you know, to move a game.
I hate it.
And then sell it and then move, buy it again and sell it. Yeah, it's kind of, but hey, it's what we do. It's fun sometimes.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Good to hear from you.
Okay. We also have an email from Jason. "I meant to call in and leave a voicemail on Thanksgiving." Well, missed. "In the spirit of the holidays and thinking about a common path in the hobby from frequent taker, just here to buy games and ask questions, to occasional giver slash contributor, what are each of you most proud about giving back to the hobby slash community besides the podcast? For example, I use Sark often and appreciate Ian for making it available. Maybe it was dumping ROMs from a rare board, donating or vectorizing some art, reproducing a rare part, donating or taking games to an event, etc. Thanks for the show, Jason."
You son of a bitch. You took mine. Giving back the podcast.
Thanksgiving.
Good topic.
Yeah. You want to cry or something.
I use my own shit all the time, so I'm always up on Sark.
I know. Same here. It's an superior interface compared to scrolling through ARC.
Yeah. What I really appreciate are the couple of times I've been able to preserve stuff. So I had a copy of a Deco tape game that had not been dumped by anyone, and I sent that off to Japan to get baked and dumped, and now it's in MAME. I think that's pretty cool. I also dumped some ROMs from my Tugboat, which had been undumped because it's a very rare board revision. So I like that stuff. I feel like anyone can make stuff if you're motivated, but stuff that's already been made, there's only one copy of, I really like preserving it. I mean, the game, they're not great games, but I think they're worth preserving anyways.
But definitely not a great game. No.
Did you get to toot the horn on Tugboat? That's good.
That's true.
Hell yeah. If you're feeling me.
You dumped the Tugboat ROMs in return, you got the world record?
So there's no draft world record on that, but I still would like to have the world record on it.
I guess my favorite way of giving back is, you know, having parties and letting people play my games. But that's a bit selfish because I enjoy it as well. I guess some of the other ways that I've tried to give back to the community is, you know, helping people fix games, things like that. Maybe picking up a game for someone else, you know, who isn't around, isn't going to be able to do it. So, yeah, sure, I'll pick that up, deliver it to you, or whatever, hold it for you. I've done that a few times. And, try to help people, you know, repair things, either, you know, via email, text, or if I have time to go, you know, actually, take a look and see what I can do, or, you know, people need a part and I happen to have it, you know, when it's not a big deal to, you know, give it to them or whatever. I guess those are the ways that I like to give back.
Don't cry now.
One thing that sprung to mind for me was I vectorized the previous Robotron marquee that was the one before the production run that I saw when they were doing the 100 million gauntlet many years ago, and Larry DeMar was on there and he posted a picture of it, and it was just kind of a picture of it laying on the floor, not a great picture, and I was like, that is super cool. It just has a big 2084 on it, and Robotron's kind of in the corner. I think people usually refer to it as the proto marquee.
You fucked your mic.
I think my cat muted me. So I took that image and took it in Photoshop and Illustrator and vectorized it and got it produced by Phoenix Arcade. So I thought that was pretty awesome.
That does remind me, way back in my early days of collecting, someone local had reached out about some Midway Cabaret games. And so I worked with him. And if you buy a Pac-Man or Ms. Pac-Man bezel reproduction from Phoenix Arcade, those are from scans off my games. And if you buy the Outrun Cabaret side art from this old game, that's also from a scan off my game.
Nice.
Very nice.
Yeah, I've done a couple of those type of things too, where I delivered them to art people to get scanned. I forgot about that.
Also, the Tempest Cabaret marquee, I mailed one of those off to Darren at Phoenix Arcade to not to use directly, but just to like check the colors and registration and all that stuff.
Nice. Yeah, I don't have any art stuff, but yeah, just helping people out, you know, like that have helped me. So, you know, if someone asks for like a part or an IC or whatever, I don't, you know, they're just cents on the dollar. So just, yeah, you know, ask for it or not. I like sending people parts or whatever. You know, because just buying some random IC online sometimes takes, you know, a week, and then you have to pay like $5 for a 30-cent IC. It's kind of annoying. Or I don't really have that much time to help others out anymore, so I try to, you know, get on Clav every once in a while, and if someone's in the repair thread or restoration threads and no one's responded to them, I try to just put some positive momentum and give them some pointers. Don't always have the answers, but it's good to like bump those up and keep the community engaged. Yeah, so just giving back with advice or banter and keeping it positive, I guess. And occasionally trolling to
of course,
because
I guess
I keep
the local email thing going too. Not if anybody cares about it or not, but
I don't care about it.
There's definitely like there's something strategic about giving a kind of wrong answer, because very few things motivate people to reply than seeing someone wrong on the internet.
Exactly.
Like you can weaponize being slightly wrong in order to get some people to crawl out of the woodwork.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah,
that's good.
And I think a healthy trolling that's not too insulting is good, because you know, people get frustrated, and just seeing some laughs here and there is kind of good in this shitty time. So
I'll show that Advanced 13. I'll fix him. I'll fix it for him.
No one can troll me as good as me. So yeah. So yeah, I'm about a 50-50 ratio of trolling / contributions on Clav, and sometimes within seconds of posting, I'll be like really helpful. Then like 2 seconds later, I'll be like trolling. And yeah.
Yeah, I feel like we've all, you know, helped each other, local collectors. Like, I'm sure I've gotten parts from all of you, and we've all helped each other move games, and we've all taken games to PRGE, and we've all volunteered there, and we've done some panels at PRGE too, which was pretty fun.
Yeah,
and just participating in those events, I think, is good as well.
Yeah, panels and yeah, helping out with the repair stuff and adding credits to games that don't have free plays. Yeah, that's my highlight of my life.
Adding credits to the real Ghostbusters.
Yeah, that reminds me of the on the side note of scary game events. Ian, you were gone for that. Like I mentioned, the time that we were stuck on the in my basement moving a game, and I wanted you there because you would have added a lot more color to it, because I didn't remember what game it was. Was it Tron? I thought it was Tron maybe, but I can't remember. But
I mean, it's probably more than one of them, but Tron is the one I remember being the worst.
Yeah but the scary event that I remember, actually it's always after the episode, was when I brought my dedicated Major Havoc to PRGE and went in through the the side entrance, you know, you pull up. I left the wheels on that game, right? The little caster wheels.
I remember.
And I think you were ahead of me. I think you had my game in your car, and I had your kids in my car. I believe that was that year. And and then you went ahead of me inside. I was behind you pushing Major Havoc. I didn't need a hand truck. I had the fucking wheels on there. And the Portland Convention Center is where PRG is. And it has this giant poured concrete floor. And I think it's like the back area, right? Like behind the show floor.
Yeah.
There's several, you know, like where you pour concrete, there's always like, gaps. Yeah, gaps, right? Where they have the forms in. And I was just pushing mindlessly, right? This game, the front fucking wheel hit that groove. It's like the fucking bike sign, you know, like the biker going over the railroad track thing. Major havoc. Seriously tipped over about, I want to say like 30 degrees forward, near shattering the, you know, like just everything, losing it. My heart stopped, and I was able to somehow grab it and push it back, but it was seriously about to just face plant on pure concrete and probably explode the bezel, probably explode the fucking amp, you know, monitor and all that shit. So,
good save.
Game.
Yeah. You know, if it was any other game, I'd have been like, shit. But, you know, that was actually pretty scary, and I didn't think of that until much later after that episode. So that's my side bonus one there.
That would be scary. Fucking A.
ready?
Yeah. Should we talk about the game?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Alrighty then.
I've kicked all your asses, and you know it.
Only you know it. Okay, tonight's meme of the episode is Congo Bongo, a.k.a. Tip Top.
Tip Top. I never knew that.
Yeah. So this is developed by Sega, or as reading on Wikipedia, don't know if this is true or not, but Ikegami Tsushinki, which also developed Zaxxon, and also helped helped Nintendo with Donkey Kong. Which is really funny because there's a heavy Donkey Kong influence on this. It was published by Sega Gremlin in the U.S. in 83. I believe this is where we have Ian come in and give his colorful synopsis.
Absolutely. So Congo Bongo is an isometric.
God.
An isometric view pseudo 3D platformer game. As Brandon alluded to, it is very similar to Donkey Kong. You are some sort of explorer with a huge ass, like a really fucking just enormous ass, who is sleeping in his tent when this ape, Bongo, sets it on fire, sets your ass, literally sets your ass on fire, and you have to exact revenge by chasing after him through four different levels. The first one is a waterfall. And in true Donkey Kong style, he's sitting at the top of this earthen structure and throwing shit down at you. And there's a bunch of monkeys and you have to get up there, and then he scuttles sideways. Second board is the one where there's some charging apes or something. Are they rhinos on that?
Yeah, they're like rhinos.
Snakes. Snakes and water.
The second one is snakes. Some Frogger vibes, where you have to navigate some platforms and logs that are floating in water and jump on a hippo over to Bongo. Third level, there are charging rhinos and you have to duck into holes in the ground. And I never got to the fourth board, and we didn't either in our game, so I don't know what it is. I guess he's asleep, according to the flyer. So it's a fairly standard platformer. You can move in four directions, you can jump, and if you walk up to a ledge, you can climb it. And every single thing in the game kills you, so you need to not touch anything. Water kills you, snakes kill you, scorpions kill you. The hippos don't kill you. The hippo? In the second level.
Oh, sorry, I was thinking rhinos. I was like, wait, whoa. Yeah.
The rhinos kill you. And then it repeats. It runs on Zaxxon hardware, and it has the same kind of perspective as Zaxxon. In fact, I bet if you laid them over top, the Zaxxon graphics would line up. You know, on Zaxxon, it has that kind of the triangles at the top and the bottom that are black for the graphics in there. And then the play field is kind of looking like it's moving up and to the right. And I bet the graphics would line up exactly between this game and Zaxxon. So that's about it. You levels are timed. They have a bonus countdown timer, exactly like Donkey Kong. You get an end of level bonus depending on how much is left. And that is the primary scoring mechanism in the game. You get scores for some weird things in the levels, but not really that much. On the first board, there's a one tile of ground that starts descending if you don't immediately jump off of it, and you get 500 points for jumping on it or having it descend or something. And on the rhino level, you get 1,000 points for ducking into some pits in the ground to avoid the enemies. You get the points for ducking, not for avoiding the enemies. And other than that, it's all about the bonus timer. So fairly basic game. I think that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll mention the other scoring stuff when you get into strategy and stuff. Yeah, so I guess we usually talk about why I picked this game. Let me tell you, it was very fun. I had a couple of choices. I was thinking about one prototype game. I was actually thinking of two other games that were completely not this game. And then I was just scrolling through some other stuff and saw this game. And I was like, oh, yeah, I've actually never played this game before. And let's just try this instead of all the other stuff. And I did play through the other games that I thought about and didn't think they would bring as good discussion just based on content. So, yeah. And again, you know, we're in virtual record mode. So we're trying to pick games that, you know, I think I saw Congo Bunga at PRGE one year. I don't know who owned it. I think I hit the start button and walked away. And that was like the only time I've ever seen it in person. But yeah, just trying to pick games we wouldn't normally see when we do go back in person recording, and thought this was a good one. Not necessarily a good game, but a good one to pick.
For sure. It's all about the discussion, not necessarily good discussion about a bad game.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the art. What do you guys think
about the art package?
Or graphics?
Art package. We always talk about the art package first. So,
what does it look like when we walk up to it? Looks like an ugly fucking Sega game with wood grain and some decent stickers and a decent bezel.
Has a flat shit brown cabinet, but no wood grain.
Oh, it's just shit brown. Ah, cheaped out.
Are you saying that this is supposed to be a flat brown game? Because I've seen it on both wood grain and I think brown.
So I believe that both Zaxxon and Congo Bongo came in both wood grain and flat brown. And
oh, okay.
They produced both variants, and I don't know exactly why. But Zaxxon is more typically in the wood grain, and Congo Bongo is more typically in flat brown. They are the same cabinet and very similar hardware. So it wouldn't surprise me if they just shifted production over at some point and then ended up building like a little of each off of the line of cabinets.
I believe the pinout's the same too. You can play, the board will play in either cabinet.
Yeah, they probably thought this was going to be their new thing. Some sort of isometric deal on the G80 hardware, but
this isn't G80 hardware. This is Zaxxon hardware.
Maybe I was confused because it uses the G80 driver, but in MAME. That's what it says. No, anyway, so.
The normal G80 is a board rack, and this is a stack of boards. But
That's weird. It must be written down wrong then. We usually start with like the marquee. I don't know.
One thing I wanted to say is I think you're absolutely right, though, that they thought this was going to be huge, because if you look at the flyer, it's this giant 4-page fold-out flyer. And
yeah.
No manufacturer made those unless they thought it was a hot shit game.
It looks hot shit. The artwork, I don't know. I try to post more pictures this time. So the marquee, I really like the main character's artwork, but the ape guy looks ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And the marquee and the font is not really, it just looks, it's not very great. It's not good.
Kind of generic. Yeah.
Ling.
The right half of the marquee is pretty nice, but the left half.
It's got that weird faded background thing going on. And I think it's nice that it leads into the bezel, but objectively just doesn't look very good.
Yeah. I don't like that background on the bezel or on the marquee. I like the style of the control panel overlay and the side art. It's kind of contrasting styles. It's almost like the bezel goes for a more realistic look of like a jungle that they also put in the background of the marquee, and then the control panel overlay is more of your like vector, like drawn art, and I think that looks a lot better than the bezel and the marquee.
I would agree. It's a catchy game. It's got some bright, you know, colors. But yeah, again, the side art and the control panel overlay is really where it's at. And then because the other stuff trying to be realistic does not look good at all.
No.
Yeah. The Yeah, you're definitely right. Like the marquee and the bezel, if those were just the only artwork, they would fit perfectly, right? Because it has that. I actually like the artwork on the bezel. I think it looks awesome. But then you shift down to the bezel, it looks like a completely different game. It matches more of the marquee, you know, kind of has that cartoony outline with the characters. Bezel doesn't really have anything. No, I don't think it has any characters at all. It's just background.
Yeah,
it's got the instructions on it.
I do really like the way they integrate the control panel with the bezel. I think that's really nice. I like it when games do that. But
yeah,
like, you know, it goes from kind of dark at the top to a lighter yellow that then matches the yellow background of the CPU. I really like it when games have that.
They could have done better though if they would have had a red marquee, you know, to match the top of the bezel to keep that all flowing through.
That looks red to me.
Is it? Okay. I guess it's the what it's just
it matches quite as well, but maybe it's just that it's further away and harder to see how well it
I'm looking at it's overexposed because
the marquee's backlit too, so maybe that takes away some of the red.
Yeah.
So maybe they did do it right. Okay, good for you guys.
Yeah, the second to the last shot that I posted, better illustration of how the bezel and the blends in with the CPO, like Ian was saying. But yeah, the CPO looks kind of like I don't know. You look at the art on there, and it's completely different. But it's also a weird representation of. It has nothing to do with the gameplay. Like this appears like it's some musical game. There's the monkeys playing
something,
and there's the rhinos are dancing. But then everywhere else in the game, it's kind of like you can tell it's some adventure game.
That's after they get rid of you. They all party.
Yeah, maybe. But it's cool though. Like the artwork's really good. Like even though it's inconsistent where it is done, like the pieces are really well done. You know, like art wise, drawn wise. Like the little safari hats for the 1 and 2 player buttons. It's cool. But I think they did that on all their control panels, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Similar.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. The side art is probably like the highest quality. It's really, really like eye-catching, I guess.
Yeah, the dude doesn't have a red nose in that one. He just has a red mustache.
Yeah, me and Ian were laughing earlier because it totally looks like he's just showing off his butt or something. Like, here's my ass. And then it's like, what the fuck is he doing? He's like tickling the fucking ape, and it looks like he's pulling his dick out or something. But
that's the thing that I think is really funny about this is like he has. This is actually mostly from the flyer artwork. If you look at the second page of the flyer, it's that same artwork with the sleeping ape and him tickling.
Yeah.
So I guess he's like. The ape is asleep and he's tickling his foot as a prank to get back at him. But he has the weirdest facial expression and the hugest ass. And the way they go together, just he looks very randy.
Yeah, is this like, is this a relationship evolving or something? the flyer is cool, though, because kind of going back to the flyer, we didn't like check out the art. But on the third page of the flyer, you can see the monkeys on top of him, which happens in the first level if you dick around. And you can see actually how it progresses through the whole game. Every single screen is on that third page of the flyer. If you go straight down from him, it's the snake platform area. After that, it's the rhinos. And then at the very end, I guess you can't really see the last level, but it's kind of like that Frogger-ish over the water stuff. Oh, yeah. Actually, that's on the fourth page. The fourth page actually has it. Oh, that's cool. Fourth page has the last map, and then it kind of restarts again. But
yeah, that's cool.
Brian, you had asked about who comes out of those holes on the third level to push you out. That's a man in a headdress, I just read.
Really?
A man in a headdress.
I wouldn't have got that. I thought it was like a mole or something. Oh, and the tip-top flyer. Says the action starts when a gorilla plays a practical joke on the hunter. The hunter, seeking revenge, chases the gorilla up a cliff over a whatever. I didn't see that, yeah. And into the depths of a jungle. During the chase, the hunter must avoid many dangers. So it's a fucking game of grab ass. Yeah, I think the art package is cool. Like, out of all the Sega games of that era, which were, what, Zaxxon, Tax Scan, and then there's a couple other... What, Star Trek and
Eliminator, Space Fury, good games.
I think Sega did a really good job of that era with the artwork. I know Tax Scan's kind of a little uninspired, but does Tax Scan have any decent side art? I don't think it does. It's kind of just
art.
I do like the art package in this. It just seems to go in a little bit of different directions here and there, but it somehow works from a distance. So
I remember being a kid and being attracted to this game in the arcade, thinking, "Yeah, that looks good. I want to play that."
Yeah, me too. I always liked it in the arcade.
All right, so let's talk about some gameplay. I guess Ian kind of talked about it, but I guess categories going forward is just gameplay / strategy, because it's basically the same. So yeah, what were you guys' strategies playing through the levels, and what did you notice to either point press or survive?
I just watched you play, and then you got to that third level where you got 1,000 points to get in the hole. So okay, that looks good. the rest of it's dumb.
It kind of seemed like on the first level you could go all the way to the left hand of the screen and not get hit by the coconuts coming down. It kind of seemed like a little safe area. At least I don't think I ever got hit by coconuts being all the way over there. So I always tried to go all the way to the left and climb up.
Yeah, it's very hard to tell where those coconuts are coming down because of the stupid isomorphic, aspect of this thing. It's hard to see how far over to the left or right you need to be as you're going up the stairs. I don't know. You guys mostly talk about it, so I just don't complain the whole time.
there's a couple different things I was noticing on the first two boards that are good strategically. The first is that, like Jordan was saying, if you're hugging the left-hand side and going up that first series of, mesas, those platforms.
Precipices.
It's likely that you get hit. I also noticed that if you are hugging the wall on one of those, when the coconuts come down, they'll bounce over you. So,
oh, really? I didn't notice that.
So you can kind of hang out there, and I think it's less dangerous than it actually looks. The other thing I noticed on the first board is that if you, as you're making that jump, that first one on the right-hand side over the waterfall, if you really hug the left-hand side of that jump, then you'll jump straight onto the platform, so you can save yourself a jump on the other side, which is kind of cool. Mm. And then also when you're getting all the way up to where Bongo is at the top, there seems, we noticed this in the gameplay, but there seems to be maybe a glitch or something in the game where if you're all the way on the left-hand side, it's almost, it's safe to climb up there, whereas the other areas are not safe. I also noticed, I was able to pull this off a couple times, but not in my game, as you're making that jump, when you're in the top level with all the monkeys running around, and there's a river in between you and where you need to go, and there's one platform that's at the same level you're at, and there's one that's one higher, you can jump directly onto the one that's one higher if you time the jump correctly. But I couldn't do that consistently enough to not bounce off it and then fall in the river and die, so I didn't try. And then on the second level, I kept getting completely wrecked by the fucking snakes. And what I noticed is that so there's a bunch of platforms connected by logs. And when the snakes are going on the log, they only move forward. They never turn back or stop. So if you try to jump over them when they're on the big earth platforms, they'll move around. And like the most of the time when I was trying to make those jumps, they just reverse and land. I'd land on top of them and die. But if you jump over them when they're on the logs, then it's almost always safe. They won't turn around. They'll only go to the next earth platform and you can jump straight over them. So that was my strategy for that, is to try to get one or two on the other side and only jump over when it's on the log to move forward.
Yeah. I had to play this multiple times to understand what the hell was going on, because the attract mode doesn't say anything. There's nothing.
Doesn't
tell
you much at all.
Yeah. I mean, it shows gameplay footage, but of course, like all fucking attract modes, the gameplay is horrible. Like it's always just someone fucking around and like, oh yeah, this is cool.
And then he jumps off the ledge on the first level. He just like jumps all the way down.
And it's like, fuck this shit. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, first map, I did notice that. If you go to the far left, you'll never get hit by anything. But of course, you have to cross, over that bridge mm-hmm. and make your voyage. Otherwise, you can't get across. There's no other way. A lot of these games, you know, you're tempted to watch videos, but I didn't. I just wanted to explore. So, yeah, the first thing I thought that was kind of dumb is like, everything kills you. And I think it was Jordan, either Jordan or Ian, was saying that the barrel or the is it coconuts on the first level?
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, you can't really tell where he's going to drop them. There's no. I think the AI on this is actually pretty. It's pretty damn good because. I don't know. I found like if I stay towards the right side as I was on the lower end of the level, you know, like at the start, that I could kind of get him to start over there and then just stay on the left the whole time. And then by the time I got up to where the bridge was at, I could make it safely across. And I did find, you know, how Ian, you were saying like up at the top, how you can somehow basically jump up to the higher platform where you think you can't. So, You can get 1,000 points on this, but it's very difficult. Not on that jump, but you know, the first one where you get 500. If you jump on the platform to the left of the one where you commonly jump on, it'll give you 1,000 points instead of 500. But more often than not, and I found that out by accident. I was like, why am I getting 500 points for jumping across here? This seems kind of dumb. More often than not, I would just die and just jump into the water or off the cliff. So I was like, that's probably not the safest bet. And just the other thing is the monkeys at the top. The green one, I still don't really understand it. It seems like you can kick it off and it doesn't really bother you on the first level. But on the brown monkeys, if three of them jump on you, they'll throw you off the cliff and you'll die. So with that one, you just kind of have to avoid them. And if one of them gets you, I don't know if jumping helps, but if you jump, it eventually shakes them off. If you stay there, you're basically just asking for the other ones to get on you as well. Second map, this one was really hard to kind of figure out, but I found like if you kind of fake them out, you know, start heading towards the right after you're on the main platforms, you can kind of, you know, just like Pac-Man, you can kind of like control where they go. And then if you get them on those logs, like Ian was saying, they're in that path where they can't go backwards. So all you have to do is worry about jumping over them. And then
you don't want them to like get more than one on the big square areas, because if one's coming towards you and you're going towards it to jump over and there's one in that spot that you're going to, that they'll most likely screw you over.
Yeah. The thing with this game is like your character moves very slow. So you have to plan your moves out. And it's just very difficult. That if you have the snakes on that platform and you're not out of there, you're basically dead. I don't think there's anywhere on that level, and I could be wrong because I didn't investigate it or anything, but it seems like on the second level you can't really get like those 500 or 1,000 bonus point. I didn't see any. I don't think there's a way. I mean, maybe obviously someone that's a crazy player will know. Third map. This one was the interesting one because I had no idea that you could hide in the hole. So when I was playing this, you know, you start out in the hole, and I was like, the first, I think like 5 or 6 times I played it, I'm like, it seems like the holes are bad. Don't go in them. So started just trying to dodge the rhinos, and that wasn't working. I almost just gave up on the game after the second level. But then after I got to the third level, I was like, well, how do you beat this? And then I saw in the attract mode, wait, I don't think that one's in the attract mode. Maybe it is. I somehow wanted to jump, but I noticed that you could hide in the hole. So I was like, oh, that's cool. It seems like a mechanic that's not really explained anywhere. Yeah, I don't know if it's on the bezel, but I found that out by mistake that, oh shit, you can hide in the holes.
I believe it is on the bezel. I think it does say that you push the button to duck.
Does it? Okay.
But that was one of the things in this game for years. I've thought I can go in these holes and not get hit by the enemies, and then every time I go in and I get hit, and I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah, that's what happened to me. I was going into him, I was like, okay, this is like a safe spot. I didn't realize you had to hold A, or mm-hmm. keep on saying A, but you know, the jump or duck button to like then hide.
Yeah, the jump button becomes the duck button.
Exactly, yeah. And so, and then I was like, oh shit, you can get 1,000 points each time you're in this fucking hole. And actually, when you first start out in this hole, in the start of the level, if you go out of it and just go back into it, you get 1,000 points just for doing that.
Yep.
And I think around, 10,000 points, you get an extra guy And so if you do pretty good on the first two levels, you can get almost up to where as soon as you get that first 1,000 right off the bat, you get an extra guy. And then I was just trying to figure out how to beat the fucking level. And the rhinos are just crazy. Like, they charge you and you have to kind of, you know, dodge them and jump and hide in the holes. And I eventually got past it into the fourth level, which was the Frogger-like level. And that level is so hard. I think I passed it once. And I got, after you beat that level, it says, congratulations, and it starts over. And then they add snakes and another and more monkeys to the first map. They add snakes on the bridge, and I never beat it. But past that point, but what I found was, you know, in the past we haven't really used point pressing much. But I was like, this game's so hard. If I get to that fourth map, I'm just throwing away points. Might as well just hang out at this third map and just fucking jump in the holes. And
yeah, that's the way to go.
I normally don't like doing that, but the game's so hard, and you don't get any points throughout the levels. Like, you get, I think you get 10 points per like forward motion. It just like, you know, counts by tens, and, you don't get any points for like jumping over enemies. You don't, I mean, it's just kind of the point system is very odd how it applies points. So it's either bonus or yeah, doing those point presses. And that's even applying those strategies was very difficult because it's just a very challenging game. That's about all I could, you know, speak to the gameplay.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty thorough explanation. Yeah, the Rhino stage is definitely the hardest and the one that was frustrating me the most trying to get to the other side and get up. There were so many times when I started to crawl up the little cliff, like the first step to get to him, thinking I could make it up and like get away from the rhinos, and they just totally screw me. Because my big ass was like hanging out
there. Yeah. Fucking 500 pixel asshole.
Yeah, the other thing about this guy is he's got a huge red nose, and like and Brandon was saying when we were playing, he looks like the operation, the guy in the in the game Operation with the big red shiny nose, or I guess Rudolph.
Seasonal.
Exactly. Yeah. This is a Christmas episode. Not
it's true. It's true.
It's more like the New Year's episode.
Ian, do you have any strategies you used?
I said all the strategies that I did not do well, so I yeah. The ones that I was trying to use, but did not really deploy successfully.
Yeah. I think the only other thing for me was just like trying to get him lined up. So when you pushed to the left or the right or up, you were going in the right direction. Like at the beginning stage, when you're at the top with the monkeys and you're trying to line yourself up to go over the stream, just to try to line yourself up where you're not too close to the edge and where you can be like, find your the time when you can get between the coconuts and just go and jump over that stream and make sure you're lined up correctly, because if you're not, you're in trouble.
Yeah, the combination of the isometric view and the kind of like weird hit detection made this game really hard to control. And I think the controls themselves were actually pretty responsive, but just figuring out where you needed to go and like what would or would not kill you was really difficult, because, you know, like everything does fall off the edge, wade in water, get attacked by a snake, get hit by a coconut. You know, it was just a lot. And like you were saying, if you don't line the jumps up, oh, here's the other thing that kept killing me too, is I mentioned before, if you jump and you hit a wall, then you like rebound off it.
Yeah.
Tennis ball. And if you do that on any platform that's only like one tile wide, you just fall off the edge and die horribly right away. So, you know, it's really hard to control. The thing that I found kind of like both frustrating but also kind of interesting about this game was that most games, when I play them for the first time, I'm not very good. And you can see your progress increasing. Like, you get better and better at it the more you play. And this thing was, if anything, the opposite. I felt like my first game, I did pretty good. I got the first, literally, I sat down today. I've played this game maybe once or twice, but very, very little. I sat down and I got to the third board on my first try. And then every time after that, it was like, eat shit on the first level, eat shit on the first level, get to the second level, die there. I did not feel like I was making progress the more I played it. I felt like it was just completely random whether I would do good or fail with like 500 points.
Yeah, the repeatability of it's hard to be consistent because like you were saying, the isometric view actually added a new category that we'll talk about maybe next game, but I'm going to add a controls in as a topic. But isometric, and then like where you're at in the field, right, is very difficult. And so you may think that you're, you know, a couple pixels over of the enemy's path, like the snakes, for example, or that, you know, but you're not. You're actually, according to them, you're dead. Or you think you're going to make a jump, but you're really jumping into the water instead of the platform. And I had the same problem. Like, I did horrible. I even found that it seemed like the first level was getting harder for some reason. Like, it was punishing me. I was like, what the fuck? It's like the monkeys were being more aggressive. The thing that bothered me about this game was that, I'll probably save it for my review, but, when you coin up and you start the game, it is the hot foot beginning. And I don't like how I just can't like jump right into the game and skip it or whatever. And so I loaded up a 2-player game, and then that way I was able to just kind of avoid the fucking intro and all that, just to practice with a little limited time that I had. And
you didn't have to watch the intro twice. That's
exact.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you only have to watch it once. Yeah,
that was one of the reasons I got rid of Kickman. There's a lot of not playing time where you have to just watch all these things in between levels like that. And this isn't that bad, but still, that that thing at the beginning, the hot foot, which is actually just he's setting the guy's tent on fire. So I don't know why that's hot foot, but anyway, that's annoying.
Maybe that's why his ass is so big. His ass is on fire and it's just inflamed the whole game.
Yeah, it's like burnt and blistered and red.
I don't know if y'all have played many modern games, but every time I play a modern game, it has the exact same problem, but like 100 times worse, where you load up the game and then it's like 15 fucking minutes of bullshit where you can't actually play the game. And I do not get it at all. It makes me so irate. So yeah, if you don't like that, then this is the same thing. I hate it.
I'm just saying, they're trying to play anything.
Save point like at the beginning of the level, so I wouldn't have to keep watching the fucking hot foot animation.
I'm guessing Ian's not a Metal Gear fan.
I've never played.
Yeah.
Those graphics, man, is amazing. See how it burns a dent? Wow. I honestly didn't even know what the fuck was going on. I had, when I saw this back in the day or now.
It's not that bad. It's pretty obvious.
I had to read it out of the flyer. I don't know.
I don't know where to throw it in, but I'll just save it for my review regarding the controls.
Talk about
controls.
The game. You don't have to say this thing and that thing. We'll just talk.
Sure, I do. So let's just talk about graphics and sound.
Okay, I'll start. I think the graphics are actually really good on this game. I think it's a really great looking game, and they did a really good job with almost everything. I think the like guy with the headdress and a hole is maybe the only thing that they miffed on. The one thing I would say, though, that they could have done was give more depth cues. You know, like if you think about playing Zaxxon, you have the shadow on the ground and you have the elevation meter to help you like figure out where you are on the board. And this game could have used something like that, especially when the coconuts are coming raining down. Having a shadow to know where it's going to land, I think, would have helped me a huge amount. But I think the graphics are really good and the animation is really good. Like when you're climbing up those steps, I think that's just really fluidly animated and really good. The one other thing that I want to mention is, like, I think it's really cool that you can climb up the steps both ways, right? You see two of the four sides, and you can climb up either the front or the side of it. And I think that's really nice and just makes the game feel a little more three-dimensional, as it were.
Yeah, the graphics are really good. Like, I accidentally put on the... I was playing with the filters in OpenEMU, and I accidentally put on the fucking CRT like emulated thing with the scan lines and shit, and it actually looked really good. Well, besides the stupid distortion, but like with the scan lines, because you know when we're playing it on LCD screens, you can't see a lot of the how the detail lays out as opposed to on a CRT. And yeah, this game looks really good, and I love the flyer shots. I love off-screen shots on flyers because it always makes the games look really good. And on this game, you know, if you look at the flyer, Man, it looks fucking awesome. It looks like it does look like a kind of like a cartoon. The animation is really good. I like that too, where you're like, I was comparing it to like the Donkey Kong ladder thing, where you kind of get stuck halfway up on this. If you're like almost across to the, or the after you climb up, you can kind of like stop yourself if you want, and you can go up and down or jump around. And that's kind of a cool touch to where it's not stuck because of you. It's just because, or it is stuck because of you, because you can control it really good, really fluid. Yeah, the depth perception is a huge thing with isometric games. And I was trying to think of other games that are isometric that, to me, Zaxxon, like the altimeter, like you're talking about, that shows the elevation and the shadow. I still can't play that game. I don't even think I can get past the first level. I think Zaxxon needed a lot more than that. But this, I don't.
Jordan left.
Oh,
he's done.
Fuck Congo Bongo. I feel like, yeah, it's really, really hard to make this work. It works in games that are not platformers, but for a platformer, it's really, really difficult. Like, you know, this is basically a combination of Donkey Kong and Frogger, and obviously some sort of Zaxxon inspiration with the isometric. But the first level, that bridge, like, it doesn't seem like you could go anywhere but the middle of the bridge, but you can actually go on the right of the bridge, the left of the bridge, and there's so many actual paths you can take. Most classic games, you know, you're going down a corridor and it looks bigger than it is, but you can only you're just stuck on that path. But this game, there's a lot of freedom of movement with, you know, the given restrictions of like water and all that. And I think that's cool, but I agree with Ian, like the shadows could have helped. And the other game that I could think of that kind of just does a good job is maybe Crystal Castles, because it actually has gems on the ground. So you can, that mechanic of that, you can actually see exactly where you are. And while the controls are responsive in this game, I like how in Crystal Castles you can just fly through the levels. And I think if the player's movement was a little bit faster on this, it'd be a little bit easier to avoid shit. But yeah, graphics are great. I really enjoyed them. I'll wait till everyone else talks about graphics before going to sound, but go ahead.
Yeah, Brian, just to say, like, I don't think Zaxxon is an exemplar of great cues for depth, but it had some. They obviously realized it was a problem, and they were like, okay, we're going to do this to do that, and they just didn't even try on this. And I think even having something that was flawed over having nothing would have been an improvement.
Yeah. Yeah, the coconuts, you can't really tell like how far away they are or when they're over your head. Yep. I didn't know that you could hug the wall, but if you don't, chances are you're going to die. And it's no Donkey Kong that's obviously 2D. I mean, you know exactly where stuff's at, but that is definitely the challenge in designing the game like this.
Yeah, some shadows would have been good for those coconuts coming down. I agree with you guys about the graphics. I think the graphics are great. They're really colorful. They're really detailed. I mean, I just love the level of detail in all the levels, like the waterfall in the first level, and just like there's like some bone, like a skull and bones in the first level, and then even like between the levels that it like pans over and you see some stuff. Like there's one, I think it's from the second to the third level, where there's kind of like this prehistoric looking bird just sitting there. So I really like all of that. And like Ian was talking about the climbing animation, I think just that level of detail in the animation like brings something to the game. And especially back then, just seeing that detailed animation every time that you climb something made it seem a little like a higher level type of game. Just seeing that animation, the isometric aspect of it is very challenging. It makes the controls very difficult. But yeah, the graphics overall, I think, are really good. And I think that's one of the things that kind of saves the game with the controls being so difficult, is that it looks really great. And I think that makes it fun to play. And like all those little areas of the first screen where you slide down that one part, which is always just kind of fun to do when you're in the game, and you jump over the cliff that falls out from under you. All those little things are pretty cool and kind of always make me want to keep playing the game.
Yeah, I appreciate the different elements for each level. It'd be cool if, like, when it transitioned from say, level to level that you could, like, you know, just glide through it without the screen scrolling. And it'd be kind of cool to go to the second level yourself. But it's cool how it scrolls through like a seamless, you know, like basically like Zaxxon, where it's like a seamless level, all connected. And it is also cool how they, you can't really have these type of graphics in this era or this, you know, year with the tech provided without actually doing this type of view. If it was 2D, it would be really hard to pull off something that looked decent. I mean, basically it would look like maybe like Donkey Kong Jr. or something. I mean, probably better than that, but you know, you're really limited with a 2D perspective. And so I think it's really cool that they took the risk on it. And I like how each level, though, does have those different elements, that it's not just the same shit over and over. It's like it's a different environment of the jungle or wherever you're at.
And this, both this game and Zaxxon, I mean, for their flaws, you know, in the control difficulty back in 82, 83, these games were freaking amazing. When you saw them at the arcade, you're like, holy shit, this, like, it looks totally 3D. Like, Zaxxon looked awesome and you wanted to play it, but then you did play it and you died. It was like, not as good to play as it is to look at.
I think that was kind of Sega's jam in this era, was, you know, taking game ideas that had been proven and making technologically superior versions of them, you know. So you can look at Zaxxon and trace that back to any number of shooter games. And this obviously is going back to Donkey Kong. And you can look at Space Fury and say, OK, that's definitely like an Asteroids or Asteroids Deluxe type game. It seems like they did a lot of that, where maybe the ideas were kind of retreaded, but they were like, we're just going to really up the ante on the technology. Like, they seem to have some really great technology. Even I would say even like OutRun compared to earlier arcade driving games was a very technically excellent game.
Yeah, they could have just gone safe though and made it a true Donkey Kong clone, because the you know, while the first level's immediate association with Donkey Kong, not only because the ape throwing like shit down, the second level is like, you don't have any interaction with him the rest of the game. It's only that first level. And they could have essentially done a similar thing. You know, maybe the second level, he's throwing other things at you, but it's a different environment and you're scaling down or up or whatever. But instead they chose to, you know, you're interacting with other things, other enemies. And that's pretty cool. Like, I like how it's pretty, it's a pretty good variety.
On Donkey Kong, wouldn't you say, like, the second level, you're not really interacting with him as you're just going through the beam?
Oh, yeah.
And I guess the pie factory? I don't think he's throwing anything down at you except for the first level, right?
Yeah,
I
guess same thing. They're just copying Donkey Kong 3 fucking years later.
Yeah, copy's fine, as long as at least they varied it up, you know.
At least they didn't give you a girlfriend to save, I mean.
Yeah, there you go.
They changed it up in that route.
You just save your own big ass. All right, let's talk about sound / music.
I think the in-game sound that when you're actually playing the game. I guess maybe they tried to make it sound a little like Donkey Kong, and that sound I'm not a big fan of, but I like the little jingles, like the beginning when you're getting the hot foot. And in between the either, like when you complete a level or you get killed and your little angel self is going up to heaven, or, you know, just going up in the sky. All those little jingles are pretty good, but just the in-game sounds are kind of annoying and just kind of very simplistic and not very inspired, I think.
Yeah, I definitely didn't have like a sound designer for this game, that's for sure. They just kind of threw some things in there. And like Brian's saying, it's got like an annoying walking sound, you know, kind of like how Donkey Kong has that iconic walk sound. I think they were trying to do that here, but instead it's just this shitty squeak sound that, yeah, I don't know, I don't like it. And then pretty much all the other effects were very random as well. You know, there's one level where it just sounds like a grumbling stomach all the time for no apparent reason. I don't know if that's what they think rhinoceroses, that's the sound they make, or maybe the man in the headdress, that's his stomach. I don't know. The angel thing that Brian said, that was pretty good. And yeah, the little tune at the beginning is great. They probably would have done better with just maybe more background music and less constant annoying sounds throughout the levels. I never made it to the fourth level, so I don't know what the sounds are there. But 1, 2, 3, there was nothing I liked.
There's not really any sounds in the fourth one, so...
They just totally gave up by that.
No, there's not really anything. I mean, there's hippos, there's fish, and
isn't there the sound of those one rhinos like running on the other side?
Yeah, that's at the end though. Like when you get down to the end. Yeah, you mentioned that there was huge similarities. I was like, oh shit, they brought this squeaky foot of Donkey Kong. That's like one of my most hated parts of that game. Not only does it sound like shit in Donkey Kong, it actually sounds less shitty in this game, but still shitty. I don't like either sounds. I hate walking animations or walking sounds. Like I don't know what it is, but it's just annoying. It's distracting from the game, I think. And you know, games like Major Havoc or something, when you're walking, it's a little bit different. But this is like when it's like a fucking chirp or a squeak. I mean, you're on fucking dirt. Nothing's going to be squeaking. I mean, I guess it makes more sense on girders or something, like if you have like a fucking balloon foot. But that's one thing I don't like either about these games. Less annoying on this game, still annoying.
Just how his hot foot sounds.
Yeah, maybe that's a hot foot sound. The sound of the coconuts are kind of annoying too. I like the rhino noises. I thought that was cool. It's kind of like a bassy sound. Yeah, they're very basic. It's like they put all the effort into the graphics and all that, but the sounds were definitely second. Definitely didn't have a good sound guy.
I mean, good sound should probably like convey something to you, give you some kind of message, you know, like something that's going on in the game. And these sounds don't do that.
Yeah. You know, like the start of Donkey Kong, he's pounding the girders and kind of announcing the level. This doesn't really have that. I mean, you could say maybe like, you could hear maybe some waterfall noise or the ape getting pissed off or making noises when he throws stuff or something. But instead, you're just kind of left with some weird sound effects that are just sound. They sound kind of like secondary to the game, like it's an afterthought. The transitional stuff's good, though. Like, yeah, like the dying and the intro is cool, but it gets obviously old after the second play. And I do like all the transitional stuff. It's awesome. So.
There's a sound that the snakes make when they're traversing between the two platforms that they're on, when they're actually going on the little log. There's like a certain sound, and I think, and then there's, you know, the rhinos have a certain sound when they're charging. So that gives you a little bit of information.
Yeah.
Yeah. No disagreement here. I think the sounds are middling. I think the in-game stuff didn't bother me so much, but I died so much that I got absolutely sick of the death sound and the jingle they play at the beginning. Like, I think they're fine if you hear them once or twice, but when you're playing, you know, 6 or 7 games in a row, I was like, I never want to hear this fucking shit again. It did not do a great job on sound. I don't have anything else to add other than the in-game sounds didn't annoy me as much as I think they annoyed Brandon, but... were good. I wasn't angry about them, but like they weren't really doing much for the gameplay, and I feel like they could have done a lot more. Like when you're at the end of the level, I don't think there's even a sound while Bongo is like scuttling like a crab off the screen. No sound when you're moving between the levels. Just a lot of missed opportunities that could have underscored the gameplay and just left it on the table. Too bad.
The end of the levels, it's almost like, did the game crash? It doesn't even
exactly
do anything. Yeah.
Yeah, there's not even really a congratulations sound. It's kind of, yeah, like, what's going on? There's no, the bonus counts up, though, right? And you see that, but Yeah, it's like it is a lot of missed opportunity. Like they could have brought a pretty good, decent sound package to this, even if they would have just chose to use the sounds in different places instead of where they chose them.
Even just a bonus counting up sound, you know, like it's counting into something like that to let you know
or
into the level.
Or make the counting sound bongos, you know, like playing bongos. Like,
sure.
And they should have hired me. I was only 2 years old, though. But, I mean.
Yeah. You have they didn't really do a lot to reinforce the jungle theme with the sounds at all.
Yeah,
should have had some beats the whole time, like Congo drums going on the whole time for like a backing track. That would be cool.
And yeah, that's a good idea.
Bonus sounds like you're in the fucking jungle, not weird sounds. I don't know. They probably just couldn't make good sounds. Maybe they didn't care.
I think they could have. I mean, that's the thing, though. Like this, graphics can be considered into the animations as well. But, you know, gosh, it's so primitive looking, like the startup screen. The track is the logo, and then you're just greeted with scores. And I really dislike the Hotfoot intro because, you know, I assume back then it'd be okay because, you know, you probably walk up to a game, see it once, oh, that's fucking awesome. That's cool. And then...
Who's playing?
What? Someone's playing the game. It's just kind of distracting. Sorry.
That was me.
I wasn't done, but I was just saying, like, I wish you could skip it, or I wish it was like every five, or maybe the Hotfoot part was part of the attract mode and not part of the game start. Like, you could just, if you let the screen sit, you could see the game starts off, which a lot of games actually do. Like, for example, the game we just played not long ago, Splatterhouse, if you let it sit, you can see the story and all that, you know, all this. Some of the story of like, oh shit, we're running into a building. But if you hit start, it just goes straight into it.
I was going to say the exact same thing. They should have put that in the attract mode because the attract mode sucks. And like the Hotfoot animation is so unclear that you lose nothing from the gameplay by not having it in front of every game. And if you think about like, you know, Pac-Man, which is probably the game that popularized the intermission animations, you know, they showed them to you as a reward for getting through the game and being able to take a break. And it just makes no sense at all to put that up front in the game, especially one that takes as long as it does. And although I think the graphics are good, the animation on that sucks. Is in the tent. Well, okay, it kind of sucks. I think I like the tent animation, how the tent is like bowing in and out while he's breathing or snoring. But then as soon as he gets the hot foot, he's just like doop, doop, zigzag. And then the game starts and it's shitty. It should have been in the attract mode.
Yeah. And that would have been
either.
There's no what?
At all. We're still talking about sound. There's no sound at all in the hot foot animation.
Yeah. I think, like you said, Pac-Man, that would have been cool if they, So they moved that to a track mode. And then since the levels are so challenging, if they would have had like a little cutscene here and there, maybe after the from the second to the third level, because that's kind of like a good accomplishment, I guess, right? Or some transitional animation, like some back and forth between the ape and you, or something like that. That would have been kind of cool. But I don't like stuff that delays gameplay. Like I like to just play the game, and when I put my quarter in and hit start, I want it to go straight to the game. That's kind of asking for a lot, I guess, depending on what game it is, but. Yeah, if you're like trying to practice or something, it's so frustrating. Like I was just like, God damn, I have to watch this fucking thing again. The death animations, they're awesome. Like I love how it does that, but you have to wait till it goes all the way up to the top of the screen. And I'm like, fuck, just let me, just say I'm dead. And then that's it. And just
speaking of death animation, one of the things I noticed is that if you die on the extreme right hand side of the screen, then you have like 2 pixels of the halo of the death animation is all you can see.
Yeah.
It was pretty half baked.
Zach Stoft. Yeah.
We talk scores and ratings.
Yeah. Let's talk about scores and ratings.
Right. Let me grab some scores. Okay. So, Jordan is in spot number 4 with 3,990, but we know who really won this episode. I'm taking the three again, 4,820. Brian in number two with 12,680. And Brandon bringing it home again with 19,500. So we have a rule that three wins in a row and you have to cede the throne. So I believe you need to pick someone to choose the next game.
Yeah, I think I want to pick Ian because I feel like he hasn't picked a game for a while. And I really want someone to... I'm actually glad we have this rule now because it's getting really difficult to find games that have some meaty content. And so I'm very happy to pass next episode's game selection to Ian.
Excellent. I will be happy to pick something and I'll try to surprise you. Let's talk... ratings. Brandon, you want to lead us off?
Yeah, so this game has, like, essentially it has everything, right? It has good graphics, the controls are pretty good, the controls in the environment, I say controls are good as in, like, they're responsive. You go up, you go down, you jump, it's instantly jumping, it's fluid, the controls seem pretty one-to-one, but those controls plopped into the environment make it really challenging because, like we spoke about, not very many cues. It's like, it's really a game where you have to play it a shit ton to really get down where you're really at in the levels. And I feel like the hitbox and the collision detection, you know, sometimes you're like, what? I was there. And it's really, really frustrating. Games like Frogger and all that, they really nailed just the really tight mechanics down. But once you plop yourself into an isometric world, it's just like extremely challenging. Like, I don't know if they could have done better besides, you know, changing a few things here and there. So yeah, it's pretty respectable in that department, but it's just really, really hard. Like I've always said, I like games where you can feel like there is progression. Like, you know, I'm not even that good at Donkey Kong, but I think I can at least get around a couple times and, feel like I could do better and better, you know, like Robotron and all that. This game, the AI is so challenging, and you're left with the isometric challenge of where the fuck you're at in the level. It's so difficult. You know, you could play 20 games and never make it past the first level, or you can play one game and get all the way back to the start again, all the way through the screens. So it's just one of those games that I really, really wanted to like because I've never really played it or explored it. I love the theme. And I love, like, the execution's actually pretty good on most fronts. But it really just, it's like a shiny package. Lots of really good things about it. I really don't really see myself playing it much again because it's just, I don't know. Well, maybe I do. I don't know. There is something about it where it looks really good and so you want to like it a lot. But you can't always be suckered into graphics. You know, you have to enjoy it while you're playing. And it's just... extremely frustrating. You think you're gonna be able to pull off things that you should if you're responsive, and sometimes they just don't happen, and that's kind of a gameplay killer for me. You know you have good reaction time, or you're pretty decent at stuff, and just the way that everything's laid out, it just kind of sometimes it kind of kills the mood, like, oh shit, this could have been so much better. So I'm gonna rate it coins down. Jordan.
This is I really don't like isometric games with joysticks that face the wrong way. I don't understand why any game designer would think that's a good idea to have you moving on a diagonal, yet the joystick goes up, down, side to side. It's a terrible view. It's hard to tell where things are on the screen. It just adds a degree of difficulty to gameplay that's not, doesn't make it better. It just makes it frustrating. This is a tough one. I mean, there are isometric games that are good. The ones I mostly can think of are trackball games like Crystal Castles, Marble Madness. Also, then you have Qbert, very isometric, but they turn the joystick at a 45 degree angle, so it makes some sense. I don't care how good the graphics look, you're not going to overcome this difficult gameplay. And again, like others had said, this, it doesn't feel like you can get better at it. I literally played it like 3 times and I probably scored, you know, like next to nothing 2 of those times and then a really decent score like 1 time. But yeah, it gives me nothing to come back to. There's no reason I'll ever play this game again. I remember it when I was a kid and I wanted to like it. I thought it looked awesome. And then, you know, I played it and was disappointed then. Probably died really quick. Didn't know what the hell was going on. And yeah, so that you could guess that I'm going to be a coins down on that.
I was going to mention really quick, Jordan, you brought up a good point of Qbert. And I know they flipped the controller on Qbert, but the thing that you can't do in Qbert is move within the space. You know, you're stuck on those cubes. So I don't know if you could really pull that control scheme off in this because, you know, the fact that you can move within so many different areas of the level. But trackball would have been interesting, though. That would have been an interesting way to try it.
You don't move fast enough. Like, if you think of Crystal Castles, you're, like, booking it around the level when you're spinning the track.
Yeah.
I can't see the kind of mentioning the timing-based nature of the game working very well with the trackball.
Yeah. Sorry to sidestep here, but I agree. I was going to comment, like, I hate how you have to stair-step through some of the level, you know, like the second level, just to get up to that the first platform. It's kind of frustrating that you have to do that stupid little stair-step motion, and you feel like your character's in mud. I do wish that he would move a little bit faster, and you'd cover more ground at least. I think that would have been a little bit of an improvement. Maybe you could just plug that into the other part where we were talking.
So, fuck off!
Who goes next?
Brian.
Me. So for this game, I agree with you all that it does have its problems. I'm pretty nostalgic for this game because I always played it in the arcade, even though I wasn't super good at it. Whenever I would see it, I would play it. And like I said on that Rhino level, I never even knew you could push the button to duck until I started playing it last night. But like I said, the graphics are kind of a saving grace for it. I really love the graphics on this game. And just the replayability in as far as, I don't know if it's easy to learn and hard to master. It's definitely hard to master. But it's one of those games where I like kept wanting to play and get further in the levels as I could. So it is a coins up for me because A, it has a nostalgia factor. 2, I really like the graphics. Sound is, you know, so-so. But just the fact that I wanted to keep playing it, like last night when I was playing, it was like just one more game, just one more game. I want to get to the fourth screen. I don't even know if I could get even much further than that. Once you wrap around to that first screen again, it is super hard. So yeah, this game is hard, and I guess that makes it kind of appealing to try to get through it because it is so hard. If you can fight the controls and kind of figure them out, which I kind of thought that I was figuring out the controls as I went, figuring out where you needed to stand and how you needed to, where you needed to be in order to, when you're going left, you know, like I was saying, lining yourself up to go over the stream. It is like a DK ripoff, and there are things that, you know, there are problems with it, but yeah, it's a coins up for me because I really like this game and I always have. Ian?
So the thing about this game is that it has great curb appeal, right? Like, if you're just looking at the graphics, it looks fucking amazing. It looks great. Like Brandon was saying, it's a really shiny package, except for the cabinet, which we didn't talk about too much, but the cabinet sucks dog shit through a hose. But the actual game graphics are really great, and it makes it look really, really appealing. And that was kind of my only impression of the game, was like, oh yeah, it has really nice graphics, so I bet it's fun to play, because the graphics look really fun. And I really agree with what Brandon said about the theme. Like, they really did nail the theme, even better than Donkey Kong, I think. You know, it's just a really consistent theme throughout all 4 boards. And it's a nice twist on things. Not too many jungle games, you know, Jungle King maybe, but it's a setting that's not super played out like space shooters are super played out. So I think that they had a really good idea and they did a really great job on the graphics. But wow, I did not enjoy playing it. This is really the first time I've spent a lot of time trying to play it. Like I think Brandon was saying, again, we had a copy at PRGE a few years ago, but I didn't have time to play it too much. And I think it's on the 60-in-1, which I had for a bit, but I didn't play it too much on that either. So this is the first time I've really sat down and tried to play it, and I just didn't enjoy it. So it's coins down. Like it feels like such a crapshoot. I feel like I could just be playing a slot machine because it's so disconnected from what I'm actually doing. It feels like it's just random whether or not you're going to die or make it through a level or not. And that's not that enjoyable to me. So I'm coins down.
Yeah.
I pulled up the arcade page for this to see what the high score was on there. And the person that has it, the high score is 455,180.
Motherfuck.
How do you play it for that long? I don't know. It also says that there is a copy at Coin Jam, according to Orcade.
Mm. Yeah, maybe CJ had the one that was at PRGE.
Yeah, possibly.
Fun fucking fact, Galloping Ghost bought Orcade, so they own that now.
Did they? I didn't know that.
Yeah, and they're going to do some pretty good expansion on it. Yeah, I feel like, man, they could have improved it so much. Like, why is my character so slow? You know, if they would have maybe beefed that up. Sound, I don't really, I could put a pass on that and be okay. Graphics, they nailed, but the challenging aspect, and you're dropped into this, you know, Donkey Kong. I actually don't really like Donkey Kong, but, you know, the first level of Donkey Kong, you could see like the flames and the barrels. You know that basically if you touch that, you're probably going to die. In this game, it's so hard to really figure out. You have that Donkey Kong recognition. Oh, he's throwing shit, so I know that's going to kill me. I don't know that water is going to kill me. Like usually in these games, like they design water as a background, but you can't go into it. You know what I mean? Like it's kind of just like a background graphic.
Yeah, I jumped in the water hole not knowing it was going to kill me in the hippo level. I'm like, I don't know, just like a little tub. What's wrong with that?
Well, but even the first level, though, you can walk up to that waterfall and you could just die, or you could jump off the level. You know, a lot of games, you're up at the top platform and it won't let you jump off. Or like Ian was saying, you could jump and bounce off of a thing. So there's so many weird, nuanced gameplay elements. And, you know, you see the monkeys on the first level. Do those kill me? No. You can actually touch them, but if three of them touch you, you're dead. You know, they'll throw you off. Or you can actually walk off the right side off. I believe you can walk off the right side of the screen on all the levels and just die. If they would have maybe just introduced less elements, I believe it would have been a little bit better. You know, maybe the second level where there's like two snakes per platform, maybe just one snake per platform. And the rhino level is so challenging. You're presented with all these like crazy situations that are seemingly like the higher end levels of, you know, maybe like two playthroughs worth.
The rhino level's crazy and it's like Zaxxon crazy where you can't tell where the hell they're going and all of a sudden they just wreck you.
Instead of bullet hell, it's rhino hell. You know, it's like
there's two different things that I want to mention. Like I've mentioned this before about the importance of having a difficulty curve in the game, and the difficulty curve on this game is fucking whack. Like I think the first level is harder than the second by like a lot. I think the second level is actually a lot easier than the first. So it's like pretty hard, fairly easy, way hard. And instead of like stepping up the difficulty and then backing it off a little bit and stepping it up, I think they missed that. And the other thing is that while I appreciate the variety in the different levels, they're all too different. Like the skills that you master on the first board are not useful at all on the second, right? If you think about Donkey Kong, right? Okay, you're on the first board and you're jumping over barrels. Okay, now on the second board, you have to jump over, you know, flaming barrels and the plugs. And then you're jumping over pies and then you're jumping across platforms, right? Like you're taking that core mechanic and you're allowing the mastery that you develop in the earlier levels to be upped on subsequent levels. And this is all over the fucking map, right? Like nothing you do on the first level is useful at all on the second level. Nothing you do on the third level is useful on any other level. It's all, there's no ability to like build those skills. Everything is its own. Like it could be, every board could be a completely separate game.
Yeah. And I mean, I mean, it's 2 years apart from Donkey Kong, so I mean, I'm sure they're trying to just do everything they can and make it radically different, and that's what players want, right? They want variety instead of just the classic games where it's like every level's the same. It's just a different level number, but it's like the same exact shit. So maybe they're just trying to, you know, make it all crazy different. But yeah, I really wish they would have just controlled the difficulty and made it a little bit easier. I mean, Zookeeper is like the opposite to me. Like, they handhold you so much until you get to like the real action level. So it's kind of ramps up really slow. This game ramps up too hard. It's like Missile Command almost, you know, where it's just, you know, maybe they should have just stuck with the coconuts in the first level and maybe made like some platforms that move or something, and that's it. But instead they throw in these weird monkeys and all this shit.
Well, I do think that, you know, the year it came out is important. This came out in 83. The market had collapsed, and the only games that earned anything were ones that had a short play time, which meant they had to be too hard. So I think that it was definitely one of the reasons behind why the difficulty is like it is.
Yeah, so I was looking at actually other games that came out during this time. Elevator Action, Xevious, I'm skipping some, Pole Position, Star Wars, Astron Belt, yeah, so not much. And also the Archie Awards. Remember the Archie Awards I mentioned episodes ago? This one, Best Graphics for the Archie Awards. Yeah. And I agree. Yeah.
I do. Yeah.
Best fucking graphics.
Well, cool. Good choice, Brandon.
Yeah. The theme, I love like the jungle, like you know, it's not Indiana Jones, but it's just kinda like the, like Ian said, it's an underutilized theme. And you know, it's almost like pinball machines. If you like the theme, it's like you don't really care about some other things, you know, because like the theme's so cool and integrated and fun.
That's another symmetric game that you can actually play, Indiana Jones.
Yeah, there you go. I really wanted to like this game. Like, yeah, if I would have had nostalgia for this game like Brian did, I might have coins upped it, but I don't. So I don't. I only have what I know now. And I try to give it the benefit of the doubt for the era, but by 83, they knew what to do.
Yeah, so. I think all your ratings are fair.
Yeah. I've rated stuff up for nostalgia all the time. You know, just, it's just how it is.
I think it's interesting that the last game that we played, the ZZX, the track mode had that like screen long explanation of everything that happens. And this one is just like, here's a couple of screens. Just kind of figure it out. You'll be fine.
I love the part of the attract mode where the character just like jumps straight up and down, like yeah, for no reason.
Yeah,
and then jumps to his death.
I think you know, they probably think shit like that's funny. You know, when they're making it, it's like, oh, this is fucking funny. Yeah, I mean, you're really, there's a lot of, you know, the attract mode's a powerful tool. You know, I mean, looking at it now, you know, we don't. Or back then, you only cared about probably like what you saw on the CPU or the bezel, maybe. I don't know. I know I never really watched the track modes when I was playing games back in the day, at least the 90s stuff. I just fucking jumped in. But
all you had to do was fight and go right. You didn't really need to watch anything.
Yeah. Just put more quarters in. Just put, exactly. Just doesn't matter. Just put more quarters. All right. Yeah, great discussion. I wanted to say that I also, when I was trying to pick this game, I did realize that it was essentially our Christmas episode, but I did do some due diligence and try to look for a game that actually had like some sort of holiday theme, and it really doesn't exist. I would like to see someone, a lot of console games did, you know, like a lot of themes or levels. And I know there's a couple of arcade games that might have like one or two like holiday theme levels or whatever. I think Snow Bros, I think I saw, maybe had some level, but
Battletoads has like a snow level, and I think there's like some jingle bells playing in the background.
Yeah, I mean, there's some like hints at levels, but there's no like, this is a fucking Christmas game. And so I tried to first look in that road, and I'm like, yeah, this is not really working out. So I tried. So yeah.
Technically, this episode will come out in January. So
gah! All right. Yeah, so let's get into game room updates. Ian.
Oh, I don't have any. I've been busy with work and other stuff in my life. So still playing some Asteroids and not getting 100,000. But yeah, I don't have updates. Jordan.
I decided to make my Marble Madness pretty, so I laminated the sides and put side art on it. And I'd been stalling on the control panel harness that I needed to make, and I made that. If I hadn't, I might have talked about that last time. But yeah, that's my game room update. I have two hands again, so I can play pretty much all my games. My collarbone is healing. And yeah, but one-handed, I was playing a lot of Fire Escape. It's a good game for one hand.
So is Marble Madness all up and going now?
No, it's still laying on its side in the shop, but I mean,
oh, okay.
It's up and going. It's done, I guess.
That's a fucking bitch of a fucking game to move. God, those things are so heavy.
Yeah, and I don't like the little lip in the back. So
yeah,
they don't rest on a hand truck very nice or slide down, which lately I've just been sliding games down the stairs. I think you used to do that too.
Yeah, oh yeah. I do that many times.
Why deal with the extra 50 pounds of a hand truck? Just, you know, put the game on some blankets and get it down the stairs, slide it on its back. So yeah, not totally looking forward to that. So yeah, it's still out in the shop sitting there. Looks good though.
That cabinet design is horrible.
It's fun.
I hate that back.
Only good thing is the front access to the PCB, but I mean, if your game works, you shouldn't have to be fucking with the PCB anyhow. So how good, how great is that?
And I like how the speakers are like kind of lower and
oh yeah, kind of in your up at yeah. you, yeah, yeah, in your face style. I mean, it's got some good elements. They just need to make the back flat. And I like that Atari system one side art too. I really think it looks nice. It kind of gives the game a fake slimmer profile, you know, with the black background, and then you got the lighter gray art that almost looks like this, the whole profile of the game, but then cut off on the back. I like that deal.
The black is slimming.
Yeah, it's very slim.
That's why all of them had black side art. Yeah.
And it's got a nice 80s look to it too. Don't get me started on any of the custom stuff that people make that looks ridiculous.
Oh god, it's dumb. Yeah. The custom Marble Madness or Temple of Doom side art or even Paperboy looks stupid.
I thought you were doing the full custom wrap on that one.
No, I was not. I may have mentioned that I bought like proper silk screened artwork from Phoenix. And it was like cheaper than some of the like, I was just curious to see what else was out there. And they were like, you know, the inkjet junk stuff was like more expensive. So make sure to check with the real vendors first before you buy some garbage. And they weren't even doing it right. They were like printing one color on like silver. I think maybe I talked about this before.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, that's good stuff. Happy with it. Looks good. I did not get a control panel overlay because nobody makes them right. That game had a smooth overlay.
No, it's glossy. It's glossy. Yeah,
it's glossy. It's not textured like most games. So I'm not going to put a textured one on there. I'll keep the original smooth one that has a couple cracks in it.
Yeah. I know when I had mine, and they're actually usually pretty decent. Like they actually held up pretty good. I remember mine was like close to mint, and yeah, the repros obviously have good art, but it's a wrong lamination, and they have glossy lamination available. I don't know why they just don't try it.
Yeah, I was going to buy one. I looked real close at the pictures. I said, no, that's like just like every other control panel overlay. I can see got kind of that matte look to it, and you could see the texture in one picture. I'm like, no, that's not right.
Yeah, it's like it's called like the velvet texture polycarbonate, and it's not proper on this game. There's a couple of Atari games that actually had that, and I think the same problem exists on those reproductions too.
So that's what I've been doing.
Brian?
Me?
Yeah, sure.
We haven't had some laser talk in a while, so. Laser talk. I had seen on Clav, I think it was about a year ago, Sean Wood, who makes the Merlin board for Dragon's Lair, had posted that he had not only updated, I think he had updated it for Dexter to play Cliffhanger and also to play it on with the disc. And then he was offering that as kind of like a free update to the Merlin. So I thought I would get that update from him. And I also wanted to, when I got my Merlin originally, you had to choose whether you wanted to just play Space Ace and Dragon's Lair or if you wanted to play the whole trilogy of games, Space Ace, Dragon's Lair, and Dragon's Lair 2 for some reason, I think the Dragon's Lair 2 support was more expensive. And I was like, oh, I don't really want to play that game that much anyway. So I'll just opt for the Space Ace and Dragon's Lair for the Merlin that I was getting. I had actually bought all three games for the Dexter. So I had Dragon's Lair 2. I just couldn't play it, which is kind of dumb. So on top of doing this, I was like, well, I want to also, you know, I want to get this cliffhanger update from you, but also, you know, have the ability to play Dragon's Lair 2. And at one point, I think I saw that he said you had to like send the board back to him to get Dragon's Lair 2 support for some reason. I'm not sure why, but he said that's not necessary anymore. So he sent me a new ROM and a new image for Cliffhanger and for Space Ace. This was just the other day. So I want to put those in my game, switch it over to using the Dexter for a while, and play some Cliffhanger when I get that up and running. That's a game that I've never played very much. I've only played it, I think, a handful of times. I'm not very familiar with it, but it looks kind of cool, and it'll be cool to have it on my game and also to be able to play Dragon's Lair 2, even though that game is super duper hard. So, but it'll just be cool to have it on there. So yeah, I'll just run the Dexter for a while on that. So laser talk for you. The other thing, and I don't think that I mentioned this yet on the podcast here, but I posted to Clav about it. And there was one night I was playing Food Fight and I got a replay. And as the replay was replaying the level, I noticed that my character got killed by one of the chefs, which of course didn't happen in the replay because I completed the level. And so I posted about this because I thought it was really odd. And my thinking was, as you're playing the level, it's just recording all the movements that are happening and just replaying them. And I thought possibly I had like escaped a chef so closely that it couldn't reproduce that on the replay. And it killed my character, which didn't actually take a life away from me or anything like that. It just killed it on the replay. And a member named Weehawk on Clav said that the cause are the peas because, as he says, there is a randomness in the spread of the thrown peas. Apparently, the replay mechanism doesn't start with the same seed for the random generator, and it can cause different outcomes in the instant replay with respect to whether peas thrown by the player hit a chef or whether peas thrown by a chef hit the player. So there's, when you throw the peas, it's kind of like a spread effect. Like everything else you throw is just a solid object and the peas kind of spread out. And so apparently there is a randomness to that, to like, I guess, how far they spread. And so I'm not sure if it was him or another member had posted a MAME replay that did this, that you can see it in action, where when the person is playing the level, I think he throws peas at a chef and it hits him, but on the replay it doesn't hit him. So that chef comes around and gets him in the replay. But I just thought that was kind of cool. It was something I'd never seen before, and it like totally threw me off when I was playing. I was like, what just happened? And then like that was the end of my game because I couldn't, it totally just tanked my game. But I thought that was kind of cool.
That's boss. I read your thread on that, so I wasn't paying attention, but I did I did enjoy that thread.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. The only other thing that I've done, I kind of got distracted by working on one of my Game Gears. And I know we don't talk about consoles on here that often, but I upgraded. Well, I did a cap kit on it and replaced the screen with a better LCD screen. And I was kind of thinking about this and thought it was kind of funny how in arcade games, the original monitors that come with it are like the best thing that you can have in there. You know, you'll see all these posts of people that are like updating games and they're like, it has a crisp new LCD monitor. Like it's a total upgrade, and it never is for like an old arcade game. And even if you're playing a console like a 2600 or a 7800 or something, you want to play it on, you know, a CRT on a tube television. But all the handhelds from back in the day, the Lynx, Game Gears, Turbo Expresses, most of those have very, very inferior screens. And so the technology now is so much better. For me, it's a no-brainer to replace those screens because they look so much better. But I assume that there are console collectors that are like, oh, I want to keep everything OG and wouldn't want to replace the screen on a Game Gear, even if a Game Gear screen is working great nowadays, you can barely see it. You're like tilting. You have to like tilt it at a certain angle in order to kind of see it. And even if the brightness can turn up or turn down, it's like it's never, it looks completely washed out. And so these screens just look so much better. Like it's called a McWill LCD replacement, and it's one that I also did in my Lynx. And it just, yeah, it looks amazing. But I just thought it just seemed kind of funny that the thing that I'm doing to this handheld console is kind of like sacrilege if we were doing it to an arcade game.
I mean, I don't think it's such sacrilege in console world, because, you know, people are always doing like the RGB mods and all that shit and hacking it for pirated games. But
even the RGB mods, they're usually piping it out to like a proper television, like a proper, like a, you know, they would want to have a monitor or PVM.
Yeah. I bought the Game Gear new from Tower Records on 122nd and Halsey. Remember the Gateway Fred Meyer's used to be a Tower Records there.
Oh, sure.
I bought Game Gear from there, and I bought Streets of Rage, and even back, and that was like, I think it was around sixth grade or something, but even back then the screen sucked.
Yeah.
Like I remember new, like it was like, oh yeah, this is kind of shitty. Like, So
I don't look at console folks are originalists in the same way that people are.
I'm sure there's some out there that are.
You would think so, but I think a lot of them are in a box
or something. That's one thing, but if it's a loose console, then whatever.
Yeah. Is the upgrade good on the Lynx too?
Yeah, I think it's basically the same screen.
Oh, okay.
It looks pretty amazing. You can like, it has options where you can like turn scan lines on or off. And I was playing around with this one, and I think this is different than the Lynx, is like you can go through different modes. So it's like, there's like a mode where it just fits the screen. There's a mode where it's like a little bit bigger than the screen, and a mode where it's kind of like letterboxed in the middle, which I'm not sure why you would want to use it at that, because it's like smaller in the middle of this tiny screen. But yeah, there's like kind of like the normal way and then like a scan line version.
I wonder what the point of the letterbox is when the resolution's so,
I don't know,
crappy to begin with.
What I've seen is that some of those replacement screens are not the original resolution. And if you scale up, then it's not an exact multiple, right? Like if you scale
up. Oh, yeah.
So it's probably where it's slightly oversized. That's probably turning every pixel into 4, so it's a clean doubling, but it doesn't quite fit on the screen. And if you fit the picture on the screen, then it ends up not scaling perfectly. And if you do like scrolling side to side or up and down, you'll be able to see that it's not linear as it's resampling across it. That's generally why you want to have those things. It sucks. I didn't include it in my game room update, but I have no specific desire for original handhelds, but I do love handhelds, and I put together a backlit IPS screen in a Neo Geo Pocket color, which is one of my but the sound mod that I was doing did not work, and I have no sound, so I have to figure that out.
I remember the Game Gear had like a brightness dial, but I don't think it ever really had I know it seems like it was almost like not a true backlit LCD, like it was just spot lit, you know.
There's a big fluorescent bulb, like, well, not big, but you know, there's like a fluorescent bulb in the middle of the back of that display, and there's like a metal kind of like a triangle pyramid type of thing that I think distributes the light, but there's like a definite, and I think that it was the same in the Lynx, that there was like this fluorescent, you know, tube in the middle.
That's interesting. That's cool. I think I actually still have mine somewhere in storage. I only ever bought one game for it, which was Streets of Rage.
I've picked up Game Gears like all over the place. Like I've picked them up at Goodwills, I picked them up at the bins, I picked them up at estate sales. So I've got like a stack. So this was one, and I had one back in the day as well. I still have like my box and everything for it.
Nice. I would like to get a Sega Nomad. It would be awesome because you play all that Genesis.
I have a Nomad also.
Nice.
Nomad is dope. Yeah. I never had any of the Sega handhelds. I had a fat rich friend who had and I was pretty jealous of him, but then the batteries died like while he was visiting me and showing me how cool it was, and then I was like, okay, that's fine.
Which console was that? You cut out a little bit.
I was saying I had a fat rich friend who had a Game Gear, but he was showing it off and the batteries died, and then I was less jealous of it. But I did have some of the Nintendo handhelds. I had the original Game Boy and Game Boy Pocket and Advance. Did you do the glass bezel upgrade? That's the thing that I've done on a couple of mine. Because they do the screen lens is what they call it. It's the little plastic cover that goes on the shell over the screen. Mm-hmm. And they make these silk screened glass replacements for the plastic originals. So if your plastic is all scuffed up or whatever. But these things are awesome because they are crystal clear. And even on an original screen, it looks 100 times better just by having a glass on there because it doesn't have weird like ripples and stuff in it. They look really good. I put one on. I picked up a Game Boy at the Goodwill for $8 like 2 years ago, and it was in great shape, shockingly. It cleaned up amazingly, but the bezel was a little grungy, and I put the glass one on there, and it's just beautiful.
Nice.
Yeah, it's like having a freshly rebuilt CRT with like a shitty scratched bezel on your arcade game. Yeah. It's like, fuck.
Yeah, I feel like of the handhelds that did the best with screens, Game Boys were probably it. Like the original Game Boy screen still looks like amazing if it's in working order. You don't have like columns missing. But even like the backlit ones, you know, not the DS. What was the one before the DS? Like the clamshell one. You know that one I'm talking about?
Advance SP.
Yeah. You know, historically, the screens in the Game Boys have been pretty good.
Yeah. I had the Game Boy Pocket that I bought new when it was first launched, and I thought that was a pretty wicked handheld. Good screen on there. Big upgrade from the original GB.
Very nice. Yep.
That's all I've been doing.
Brandon, you have some updates?
Yeah. Well, not out of game room updates, so... Yeah, we had our anniversary, Misty and I. Our actual anniversary was sabotaged by our dog because he decided to break our window. And so we ended up staying at the vet all night for our anniversary. So that was fun. And so we decided to plan something else. So I got like a first time I've ever rented a beach house just for us. Usually we would share it with someone in Lincoln City. And yeah, that was really fun. But yeah, Game Over Arcade is in Lincoln City, one of our local arcades, and I was really sad to hear that Daryl passed away, which is the father of the owner. I was really hoping to like say hi and visit with him because I haven't seen him since PRGE, which was, I think, a couple years ago, the last time I saw Daryl, and that was really kind of upsetting to hear and a big loss to our local community, but my kids loved it there, and the last time we went, my oldest daughter won something in the crane machine. And so like everyone's goal was to get something in the crane machine and win something. And that didn't happen because, you know, crane machines suck. But the youngest was like obsessed with like the capsule toys and just like the non-game stuff. My 6-year-old, and they've definitely improved a lot of the stuff since I was there last time. Because I remember last time I was there and like a lot of the marquees were out and a lot of the older classics weren't working. And so it's good to see like a lot of the stuff was there. And yeah, like they had all the new Stern stuff like Godzilla, and I played the new Elvira pin. So that was fun. You know, there was the couple classics with some LCD monitors, which was kind of fun. I walked by a track and field and had an LCD in it, and the LCD actually fell off the mount. So it was like 45 degrees and hanging down in the game, the bezel. So I kind of chuckled at that, but it was just fun to be there, though, because the kids loved it. We actually went back twice because my youngest demanded to burn some more money on some capsule toys. And I played... So it was like, as far as the classics, I played Smash TV with my son, and Misty played Tapper. I played some Street Fighter 2. And I noticed... I think it's your Paperboy still there.
Jordan. That's my Paperboy, yeah.
Yeah, I took a picture of that just for fun. And I know he traded you ice cold beer for Paperboy, but he also had Zeke's Peak there now instead of an ice cold beer.
He has ice cold beer as well. He's got them both, yeah.
Yeah, and still a pretty good mix of classics, but it seems like it's, you know, just the sign of the times. You know, a lot of... I know the owner, Chris, is pretty big with pins, so he... he basically has every new Stern pin and a lot of the newer Raw Thrills stuff. So a lot of the classics are kind of seemingly going away, but there's still a pretty good representation. So yeah, it was a good visit. And it was good to see the kids actually interested in games because, you know, they're all addicted to like their phones and Kindles and all the, you know, like the shitty devices with the kind of like throwaway games. But it was fun to see them actually play. Even if it was the newer stuff, it was fun to see them actually play physical games. It was the first time we've been in an arcade basically for 2 years. And so it was pretty special. So, yeah, that's my update.
Cool. You guys want to wrap this one up for the new year? It's officially the new year. Woo! 2022.
Happy birthday.
Is it?
22.
Yeah, it will be when this episode comes out.
Not right now.
Not right now, but it will be. So happy new year, everyone.
Happy new year.
If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email at coinrejects@gmail.com. And if you want to send us a voicemail, you can at
503-766-2263.
Now go play some isometric Congo Bongo and get all the way to the end. And we'll see you next time. Thank you.